Welcome back to Lions Collective, live every single Wednesday or Thursday, depending on what goes on that week at 6 p.m. We got another episode, Lions Offseason. Today we're going through the offense, and we're going to break down position group by position group. Next week we'll hit the defense. We also have the Matt Campbell stuff that came out. Fellas are going to address that. What's going on with that? Because I'm just as confused as probably some people are as well. Before we get started with all that, how's your guys' offseason going?
Colton looks like he's having the best time.
Yeah, shout out Colton, dude. He's on vacation right now, but he's still hopping on for the boys. So grip points for him, man.
Guys, I've been eating good this week. I'm going to come back to Detroit 20 pounds heavier. I don't know if people know this. I'm currently in Austin, Texas. My sister has an Airbnb here, so I'm crashing at her place. And it's been an incredible time. I've had some great meals. I had the best cornbread I've ever had in my life. It was like a cheddar cornbread with like jalapeno butter with like flaky sea salt on the top. It just kind of melts into it. I had a great like Wagyu burger. Man, I'm eating good. I'm enjoying myself, but always got time to jump on with the boys.
We might not see Colton again, fellas.
I'm convinced, fellas, that there is a line, a geographical latitude somewhere in the U.S. where like they stop learning how to make things like cornbread and grits. Like once you get below that line, whatever it is, like it's they know how much butter to put in the grits to make them work. But you can't get good grits in
all
Michigan.
Of it.
So somebody's gonna yell at me about it, but there ain't no good grits up here.
But Terry Black's is as good as advertised. That's my first time having the Terry Black's barbecue. It's A1, top tier.
Bro, we gotta do a podcast from Austin. Let's just go. Let's just go take the show on the road.
My sister said if I name drop her place, then all the hosts can get a weekend here. So Alarmer Hideaway. That's the name of it. So we'll give some free cloud if we can get a free stay in Austin. I got you guys.
Let's roll. I'll name drop that place every 10 minutes if we're going to Austin. This offseason, you know, you start having stories come out like that just kind of came out. ESPN, a college football writer for ESPN. I forgot his name, if you guys could help me out, blanking on it, but he does great work. But he essentially did a piece on Matt Campbell, now at Penn State.
Jake Trotter, isn't that his name?
Yes, his name. Thank you for that. But he did a piece on Matt Campbell and his time with Penn State. And in the article, you know, he put in there that Matt originally accepted, because we knew that there was some interest there with the Lions and Matt Campbell, or I guess there was reported stuff going on. But it was in the article that he accepted the job, and then he backed out of the job. And now that's been going around social media. So you guys are obviously more in tune with all the specifics, or at least what was reported. What's kind of your reaction to that? How much you buy of it, you know, et cetera?
I went back over my notes initially. And I had asked both privately, and I believe I asked Rod Wood during the press conference to announce Campbell, like how many college coaches had they talked to? Because we got the pro interview list, and kind of the organizational approach was, hey, we're not going to talk about which college coaches we talked to. We don't want to affect their program, their ability to recruit in the future. And, you know, I thought that was a respectful and understanding decision, but I think we all saw the smoke, I guess, with Matt Campbell. This story coming out that he was offered the job was incongruent with what I'd heard then, incongruent with what I heard from two high-level sources from the team today. The only formal contract offer made by the Lions for head coach position was to Dan Campbell. Not Nev, not Bruce, not Matt, no other Campbells, only Dan. Now, they wouldn't go as far as to say what kind of level of conversation they did have with Matt Campbell. I still think that there was probably an interview or informal conversations that took place there. Who knows what kind of money numbers maybe have been bandied about by either side. It's completely understandable why they would target him. I mean, he's a really, really good coach. But I still believe, including the report that was out there in 2021, that the Lions offered 8 years, which I don't think any coach has ever been offered 8 years. I think Matt Rhule got 7, if I remember correctly, from the Panthers, and that went really great for them. Like, that strikes me now more than ever as agent-driven. And if you remember, Matt Campbell got a pretty nice extension from Iowa State and a pretty nice pay bump right after that. So I don't know. I feel like this ESPN story is just kind of regurgitating previous reports without attributing it. And that's kind of where this came from.
Yeah. I do remember being told during that coaching search that at one point he was their number one target. Now, I was never able to corroborate that with multiple sources, but to say he was their number one target can be true without made him a formal offer. And I do think amidst that process, he had emerged atop their list of potential head coaching candidates. And maybe the offer was never made. Maybe there was never clear mutual interest both ways, but he was definitely someone that they were very much interested in. But it is impossible to envision a world where Dan Campbell isn't coaching the Lions and the Lions aren't coached by Dan Campbell. I mean, you just ask around the United States, World Association, hey, Detroit Lions, what's the first thing you think of? I feel like right now the overwhelming answer would be Dan Campbell. He is as much the face of this franchise as anyone, probably even more than anyone, like more than Jared Goff, more than Amon-Ra St. Brown. You go coast to coast and say Detroit Lions, I think he's the first face that pops into everyone's head. So the Lions, I'm sure, are happy that it led them here. Like in the same way that they almost had to flame out with Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn to end up with Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell, kind of those guys' polar opposites. It worked out for the best that Matt Campbell and the Lions never came to be and that Dan Campbell and the Lions did. Like the Lions almost had to end up with Patricia and Quinn to find Campbell and Holmes. Like they were seeking a lot of the opposite qualities as those guys gave them for 4 years, like especially in Campbell. They wanted a coach who was open to others' ideas, who was probably a little bit more humble, who was a little bit more adaptable and flexible, someone who certainly played the game at the highest level, given that Chris Spielman was a big part of that search. And ultimately, a lot of those qualities led them to Dan Campbell. He was kind of the antithesis in a lot of ways of what they had in Matt Patricia, Campbell being a player's coach. And then they obviously valued like top-down unity from their ownership to their front office to their coaching staff. That, you know, that became kind of fractured by the end under the Quintricia, the reign of Quintricia, and they prioritized unity and collaboration and found themselves Campbell and Holmes. So I guess they say everything happens for a reason. You know, a lot of those steps along the way that were missteps at the time led them to where they are now.
Yeah, this story is kind of weird to dive into, if I'm being honest, because first of all, I wasn't even on the beat back then. I was covering Michigan State in 2021 when Campbell and Holmes were hired. So just kind of diving into the lore of this, I was kind of confused because I went back and I saw a report, I think it was from CBS, that said the Lions offered Campbell 8 years, as Justin referenced, which one, again, 8 years seems like a lot. And two, it does feel a little agent-driven at that point, especially for a college coach trying to squeeze some more money out. But then there are reports that back then in 2021 that the Lions never formally offered Matt Campbell. And now we're getting to this point now where this is kind of coming out years later. I understand the timing of the story because he just went to Penn State. But like for him, I think the phrasing in the report said that Campbell agreed to a contract or agreed to terms. And if they never formally offered it, then you can't really agree to something like that. So That part was a little confusing to me. I was trying to dig into that on vacation, mind you. I'm like, what's going on here? My brain's barely working. But it makes sense that he would be near the top of their list of candidates just because he was one of the best college coaches in the game when he was even years ago at Iowa State, was near the top of the Big 12, keeping that program that is not really a hotspot for talent, keeping them atop the conference standings for so many years is one of the most impressive coaching feats in college football. Probably the last 10, 15 years. So certainly understand it, but it is also hard to understand and picture the Lions without Dan Campbell right now. So I think it all worked out for everyone. And just going back to the coaching search, man, I did a story on Campbell and Holmes and how that whole thing worked out. They were very particular in what they were looking for back then. As we know, it was kind of a weird, unorthodox search because they were running these sort of coach and GM searches simultaneously. And they were crossing off names for any GM or any coach that was talking about, like, this is how I do things. Like, they were, if you weren't talking about we or how we see this vision going, you're essentially crossed off early in the process. And so that's really how they ultimately settled on both Dan and Brad, because they had this sort of collaborative vision of how they saw this thing working out. And it really was the opposite of the guys that came before them. So Campbell might have been at the top, but I also kind of wonder how that dynamic would have worked out with what they were looking for. you know, this is a college coach that's probably used to running things by himself, mm-hmm. used to scouting a certain way, identifying talent a certain way, hiring his coaching staff a certain way, working with others a certain way. And if that didn't fit what the Lions were looking for, then maybe he would have ultimately fallen a little bit down that tier of coaches. But I'm pretty sure they're happy with what they have now, and certainly makes sense why they landed on that guy.
I want to go back to that CBS report, just kind of tying in what you just said, right? Like the part of that was that he would have total control. And again, that's just incongruent with everything right. we know about it. I did, you know, humorously go back and just look at the coaches the Lions did announce that they interviewed, and, you know, predictably none of them are either got head coaching jobs or failed in their head coaching jobs. You got Daryl Bevel, Eric Bieniemy. Todd Bowles is the one who, you know, pulled out probably because he had kind of the assurance that he was going to get that Tampa Bay job when Arian stepped down. Marvin Lewis, Robert Saleh, Arthur Smith. Like, the only guy even in that hiring cycle that is still with their team is Sirianni in Philadelphia. And so, you know, the Lions, we you know, had no reason to believe in their hire because the organization had made so many missteps for years and years and years. You know, you don't judge it before it plays out, but like, you also don't put faith blindly in something where nothing has worked out forever. But man, they hit a home run, and I don't know if we could say sitting here in 2026, if Matt Campbell had been hired, whether he would still be in this position.
But if he was, we can say for sure that David Montgomery would still be in Detroit. That is the one guarantee in this parallel universe.
No doubt.
Yeah, that's fair. You know, it's funny that people have, I mean, to kind of go off Will's point, like face of the Detroit Lions, like I would even argue maybe Detroit sports. I mean, if you just throw Detroit sports to some random person in Iowa, for example, they're probably thinking of Dan Campbell. It's actually crazy to look back and think for a college head coach. Now, I mean, listen, I love Matt Campbell, but to think like who would have been his coordinators, you know, wouldn't have been. It wouldn't have went the same exact way because Dan, one of Dan's strong suits is his relationships with guys around the league. So it's interesting to see how this thing would have played out. And I'm with you guys. It would just, I can't imagine a Detroit Lions team that isn't coached by Dan Campbell, but he is coaching the Detroit Lions, and they're filling out both sides of the ball, or they have filled out at least so far. I know we'll see. There'll probably be another free agent, hopefully at some point, I mean, guys get cut, et cetera. But right now it is as it stands. We're going to dive into the offense position by position. We'll start with quarterbacks and running backs. Teddy Bridgewater's back, by the way. Okay, so this is great. This is great. All right, this is amazing. Luke Altmyer, also undrafted free agent. We'll see what happens with him. And then you have the new running back room. You mentioned Monty. He's no longer here. Isaiah Pacheco, Jahmyr Gibbs, Sione Vaki. Don't forget about Sione Vaki as well. He's the he's the, you know, you never know what kind of impact Sione Vaki will make. A lot of special teams, I'm assuming. And then you look also behind him, Jacob Sailors. What do you guys feel about those two position groups kind of heading into the season? And you both, I'm going to throw Luke Altmyer in there as of right now, because, you know, who knows what's going to happen with it.
You got that custom jersey on order. I feel like you're Luke Altmyer's number one fan.
Yeah. He's just like, if you were to ask guys that, hey, Jared Goff, they love Luke Altmyer. They think this guy's going to take his job probably year one. But, I kind of did like Luke Altmyer though. He's undrafted. But he should have probably been drafted. I think it's a little savvy signing there. I think he's a backup at his, you know, probably ceiling, but why not? Show love to Luke Altmyer, man. Why not?
Colton kicks off here. This was Colton's idea, by the way. We're just doing a little, little refresh on the roster. I think it's a good one.
We're still weeks away from OTAs. We got to fill some content, boys.
Good Lord.
Talking Luke Altmyer, Mason.
Talking Luke Altmyer. Yeah.
We haven't even gotten to Ben Bartsch yet, fellas.
Yeah, I think quarterback's pretty easy here, obviously. I think bringing Teddy back was kind of a home run move to make. When you think about how much of the veteran voices that the Lions have lost, whether it's Taylor Decker, Alex Anzalone, Khalif Raymond, DJ Reader, the list kind of goes on and on. You know, obviously they're prioritizing youth across the board, and I think that's probably smarter of them to do. But you do are, I feel like you are going to miss some of that leadership in some ways, but to bring a guy back like Teddy, I think he really helps bridge that gap a little bit. Man, talk about the development that he helped bring along with Jameson Williams. He's always credited Teddy with just being a voice for him, a sounding board when he was kind of going through his early mistakes, we'll call it. But Hendon Hooker too. I know he's not here anymore. I know things didn't work out, but pretty much any young guy on the roster over the last, you know, 3-4 years has credited Teddy Bridgewater in some way, shape, or form. Just the kind of guy he is, kind of leader he is. And we've seen it too. Like when Teddy first got here, he just had this aura, this presence to him where you're just like, that's a guy that's been around the block. That's a guy that knows some football and knows how to lead a locker room. So even though he doesn't have to be that starter for you, obviously, just his general impact, his vibe in that locker room, I think it's going to help replace some of the voices that they lost in free agency and with some of the tough decisions they've had to make with the roster this offseason. And then the running back room, like we all know what the deal is. Like Demo's not here anymore. He obviously won an opportunity elsewhere. The Lions gave him that and traded him to the Texans and came out pretty well in that deal. We'll talk about Juice Scruggs in a little bit, I'm sure. But to get that fourth round pick to help you move up to get Derek Moore, I thought made a lot of sense. And then you replace him with a guy like Isaiah Pacheco, who, look, he's not coming off his best season. Injuries the past 2 years have certainly kind of sapped some of the explosive runs that we're so used to seeing him early on his Kansas City career. But if he's further removed from those injuries and he's able to capture some of that elusivity back, that's a pretty good move for $1.8 million, I believe. And he can do a lot of things that they were asking Demo to do. And if you look at where Demo's role was trending, usually like 8 to 10 touches a game last season, I think Pacheco can handle that, especially if they're ready to give Jahmyr Gibbs more of the workload. So, you know, I like what they did. It's not like super sexy, but, you know, I like the leadership of Teddy and I like, you know, low cost, reasonable move and bringing in Isaiah Pacheco.
I think you could tell a lot about where an organization is at by their strategy at backup quarterback, right? Like you're not fishing for upside when you're a division title contender. And what you want is that guy that can bring calm stability. And you talk about a guy that had an aura. So he's walked in. If you can figure out the sound system and running the sound system in 3 days in the locker room, like you're a boss, you know what's going on. Teddy is there to be a second set of eyes for Jared Goff. He has seen a lot of football. He can help provide those scouting reports that are so valuable to a veteran starter throughout the week. And if Jared's got to go out, you know, he understands the offense. He's got a pre-existing relationship with Drew Petzing. You know, you just don't have to worry about him handling things, keeping the ship afloat for, you know, a half or a quarter or even 2 weeks if need be. And look, if you need him more than that, it doesn't matter who your backup is. You're probably dead in the water. It's just the reality of it. In terms of running backs, look, the Montgomery situation was untenable. You wanted him to be happy. He wasn't going to be happy. You could not pay him what you were paying him to be in the role that he had kind of fallen into as Gibbs became the forefront of that rotation. And so you go out and you pay a guy a quarter of what he was making, maybe less than a quarter of what he was scheduled to make. And look, Pacheco was priced what he was priced because he's coming off those down years, but he's 26. You know, there's still this belief, and I share it, that he can get back to kind of the player he was early in his career. But I think kind of the hidden value there is he's a three down guy, right? And particularly the pass protection, right? That's one area. And nobody's going to complain about it because of all the other great things Jahmyr Gibbs gives you. But like Jahmyr Gibbs can't really protect the quarterback. He puts effort into it, but it's not a strong suit. It is for Pacheco. And so that's a really nice, you know, asset to have as that complimentary back. Vaki Schrodinger's back. You know, we just don't know. We don't know if he's dead in the box or alive in the box, right? He missed that whole year of development. We'll see. But I'm not putting any stock in Vaki being anything until I get eyes on him in training camp. That's just what it is. And you know, let's see if the young guys can push Sailors for a role. Right now he brings something on kickoffs, and that's really about it for me.
I understand not having eyes on Vaki, but we got ears on Vaki, and that man can sing. I'll just put that up. He's a great singer. That's his one thing he's good at right now.
If nothing else, he's singing the national anthem in week one.
Exactly.
Get that man the mic. A few things. First of all, I meant to say this off the top, but I did want to just mention Pat Caputo, who is a Detroit sports icon who we lost today after a battle with cancer. And, you know, he's a staple in this town. He was for a long, long time. He was born and raised in Metro Detroit. He was a longtime columnist for the Oakland Press and obviously worked at the Ticket for 20 plus years. And in the same way that, you know, we kind of equate like the Wojos and the Stonies of the world with Detroit sports, we do with Pat Caputo. And, you know, he was gruff in his own way and maybe wasn't for everyone, but he was certainly synonymous with this town, and someone that I'll miss. I think he knew his teams as well as anyone when it came to reporters, writers who covered all of those teams at once. I know what a challenge that can be. And I always respected how immersed Caputo was in all of the pro teams here. Having said that, I think we're going to see a very happy Jared Goff this year. Just echoing some of Justin's sentiments between the offensive coordinator hire, the return of Teddy Bridgewater, even the addition of, you know, a younger, another cerebral quarterback to that quarterback's room. You're just going to see Jared surrounded by people who see the game like he does, who think the game like he does, who speak the game like he does. And I think that's going to make for a very content quarterback for much of the season. I've even heard already that, like, Drew Petsing has lifted the mood inside Allen Park just by how present he is. Like, he's someone who's always sitting down with people in the cafeteria. He's always open or up for a conversation. He's just added a lot of visibility. He's added a lot of, like, availability to the inner workings of Allen Park. And from what I understand, that stands somewhat in contrast to the way that building had begun to operate down the stretch last season when maybe there wasn't as much interacting going on. And so it sounds like he's already elevated just the mood inside Allen Park. And I'm sure Jared will appreciate that. On the running back side of things, I did want to offer a hot take here on May 7th, because what is the offense for if not for hot takes? Is there a possibility that Sione Vaki ends up with more carries next season than Isaiah Pacheco? Is there a possibility that as the season evolves, the Lions realize that a healthy Sione Vaki is actually more suited to that short yardage role than Pacheco is? Is there a possibility that because Brad Holmes mentioned Sione Vaki unprompted in our conversation with him a month ago, that the Lions see more in Vaki than maybe we see ourselves here on May 7th? You know, is there a possibility that what we saw out of Pacheco in his final two seasons post that leg injury is closer to what we will see in Detroit? And is there a possibility that Vaki, with younger, fresher legs, can give the Lions more of the RB2 boost that they're looking for to complement Jahmyr Gibbs? And I know we talked about Pacheco when they signed him, but I just can't get over the decline in production post-injury, especially the decline in missed tackles and broken tackles, which to me is, like, on top of the pass protection, the essence of his role as Jahmyr Gibbs' complement. Like, he needs to be someone that can churn out hard yards. And by the end in Kansas City, for as violent as he tends to run, he was having a harder and harder time doing that. And there's different ways to measure it, but I think the most glaring to me was 33 games before his injury, 19 broken tackles, 18 games since, 2 broken tackles, and almost a yard fewer per carry. I just think if the Lions truly just want the bruising short yardage back, that over the course of the year, Vaki might prove more effective in that role. And maybe it's not that Vaki ends up with more carries than Pacheco, but maybe it's by the end of the year, or the second half of the year, he actually ends up with a bigger role in the offense than Pacheco. It's not like the Lions are committed or obligated to Pacheco based on his contract. Like, if they get nothing out of him, it's not that big of a deal given how little they're paying him. So if Vaki ends up having just a little bit more zip, a little bit more burst in his legs, it wouldn't shock me if by the end of the year he's RB2. Is that steaming on May 7th, or is that somewhat rooted in reality?
No, it's pretty hot.
You think so?
I think it's pretty hot. Yeah, I mean, like, look, we haven't seen anything from this guy at this point. Like, 2 years in, he missed a major stretch of development. Like, I understand, like, the special teams value is great, but, like, it's pretty hot.
That was a Sar Thompson from 3. Will, I'm gonna be honest. Hey, go ahead.
I stand with
John Collins from 3. My bad.
I don't think that's a hot take. I think if you're looking at a position where someone can come and have a breakout year, like, it's running back. If you're looking for, like, a guy that's buried on the depth chart, or a guy that can just come out of nowhere and say, okay, I'm gonna take this RB2 job and run with it. Like, we see random backs pop up all the time. You're like, that guy finished with 700 yards. Who is that? You know, like,
that's just the NFL. Last year, by the way.
Exactly, man. Like, it's just kind of the nature of the game and like the opportunities that come your way. So, I mean, look, Pacheco hasn't been exactly, you know, the shining definition of health over the last 2 years. So who's to say he stays healthy for the course of a full season? We don't know. I thought Vaki looked really good in training camp last year. I know he had the nagging hamstring injury and was in and out. But when he was on the field, I thought he was making some serious strides. And this is a guy that did not play running back, did not play running back full time in college. Brad was like gushing about him during the draft in 2024 and saying this is a guy that has upside and he's going to be a special teams ace for us, which he already has been. So if you just let him develop into a running back, it's year three for him. Why not? I mean, like Bertie said, 1.8, I think we can look at it and say, oh, that's a steal if he actually hits in Pacheco. But it's also not like a detriment to your roster if he doesn't and you have to move on. And a young player that you drafted to be that RB2 surpasses him. Like, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing either. So I'm with you, Bertie. I would hate it. I think it'd be it's not out of the realm of possibility. That's not the hottest take I've heard.
I'll take that.
The concession I will make is there is a want to element to being great on special teams, right? Like there's a want. If you are going to be great, especially if you have to want to do it, I think the same holds true to pass protection for running back and running between the tackles for that 1 yard as a running back. And so I think at least if nothing else, he has the mentality baked in. I think he's got at least some level of the size. I think he's 5'11", 210, 215 ish. So there are physical traits, mental traits there. I haven't seen this man run between the tackles enough for me to say he's going to pass up Pacheco like that.
I don't think Pacheco's known for his vision, though. You know,
I don't think you're crazy in theory. I think I was just upset that it's a possibility. I think I'm just upset about it. Like, not that you're crazy, not that you're crazy at all, because you're not. If Pacheco goes down, who's next man up? It's Sione Vaki. I mean, if he who knows? I mean, if maybe he's.
But it could be a good thing, Jeff. Like, if the running back that you made a pretty bold move for in the draft 2 years ago, that everyone has agreed to this point is a bust, proves to not be, like, you'd be pretty fired up about that. You'd be pretty fired up about that, like, 8 months.
You know what I'm worried about? I fell victim to and this is not the same, but you can see maybe where I'm associating some of these feelings. I was a massive Giovanni Manu guy, and I was like, this guy, you know, he's had 2 years, you know, da, da, da. And then he stepped in and then he just looked like he looked terrible. Now, Vaki's he's not like a project, but I guess he is changing positions. You're right. I would be fired up if he stepped into that role and thrived. I don't know if I've seen anything to say that or be confident in that.
No, right? I mean, I haven't either. Only to say this, though. The last time that Isaiah Pacheco and Sione Vaki shared the field was in the preseason. In 2024, and Sione Vaki was just dynamite that game. I think he caught like 5 passes, churned out like 50 yards after the catch. The last time they shared the field, the vastly superior running back.
Can we just make this Will's dog and pony pick of the week right here?
Yeah, it's just a hell of a dog and pony pick. Shout out Kyle. Kyle's Rand, probably just this
player of the year, and Sione Vaki more carries than Pacheco.
Let me tell you about our proud sponsor of the show, Prize Picks. Maybe you could take the more on Sione Vaki's yards this year.
What is it, 12?
3.5.
So feel free. Let's go through my picks today. By the way, use that code HMA and play $5, get $50 instantly. So today, Pistons play, and I have my picks tonight. So let's get into it. By the way, this Donovan Mitchell line keeps moving. All right, these are my picks for tonight. Let me put this on stage. There you go. So I missed the Jalen Duren one last time. That's on me. That's on me. Jalen Duren points, rebounds. He just hasn't had the points. So you know what? I got back in the lab today, chat. I'm going rebounds. Okay, we're sticking with just the rebounds because this guy has been, every time Evan Mobley's out there, he's been barbecue chicken. So Jalen Duren, 11.5 rebounds. We're going more tonight against Cleveland. Asar Thompson, I kind of threw some shade at him about a minute ago, but we're actually giving him praise now. More 1.5 steals because this guy is one of the best defensive players in the NBA, and he's going to get 2 steals tonight. And then Donovan Mitchell, 25.5 points. I'm going more. I think he had 23 on Tuesday. And I just think he's going to have one of those games tonight. He's going to get 30 points, probably still lose. I think the Pistons win tonight. But I think Donovan has a bigger impact scoring wise. So those are my
three picks. He's already foul bitten. The game hasn't even started.
He's going to flop like crazy.
He's going to get to the line 28 times tonight.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. I like that. I like this. This is all, see, we're working collaboratively here. Donovan Mitchell points more. Asar Thompson more. 1.5 steals. And Jalen Duren more. 11.5 rebounds. Use that code HMA. Play $5. Get $5 instantly. And remember, gamble responsibly. All right? Because I'm not always right. But I'll tell you what. I'm right most of the time. So you should take my picks and gamble responsibly. Let's get back into it. We got wide receivers and tight ends. And, you know, you got Khalif Raymond going to Chicago. Isaac Tesla getting a bigger role expectedly, which I am so excited about, by the way. I'm so fired up to see Isaac Tesla get more of a role this year. I know they brought in Kendrick Law, Greg Dortch, who I'm very excited to see what they can kind of do with Greg Dortch. I know he worked with Drew Petzing already. And Don McLovin's still kind of floating around. See what happens with him. And then that tight end room with Brock Wright, Sam Laporta, and, of course, Tyler Conklin. Shout out Tyler Conklin. But what do you guys think of those two rooms, just some of the weapons on offense away from running backs heading into the season?
I think the Raymond move was predictable, right? Like, they wanted to get younger. That was part of it. He's brought so much good to the organization. But it was time, and they got a guy for half the price that kind of brings a lot of the same things. It also frees that ramp for Tesla. And you're not the only one excited for him, I think. 82% last polling of Detroit is excited for Isaac Tesla. I mean, the kid's just got an aura about him with these one-handed catches and touchdowns and all that. I really like the Dortch signing. I like what he showed on film in the Petzing offense. He's a yak machine. I think this is clearly a yak-based offense. I think it's maybe a really good way to describe it. And then they go out and they add Kendrick Law, who I think is your Greg Dortch in 2027. You know, very similar style player. Just super, super effective on wide receiver screens, has a knack for finding lanes, using his blocks, and kind of brings continuity there from a wide receiver four. I'm curious what you guys think. Do you think they keep six wide receivers? Because, I mean, obviously it's going to be dependent on what's going on at different position groups, but, like, is Lovett or Meeks or Tom Kennedy going to find a spot on this roster? Tom Kennedy's going to be here until he's 45, whether it's practice squad or roster, but are they going to keep six going into the season, I'm asking?
Tom Kennedy is the best kind of cockroach. He's going to outlive everyone.
Yeah, and then everyone. And then be the wide receiver coach one day. Yeah. That's what he'll do.
Ooh, six receivers. I think if you're going to do it, this would probably be the year to do it, because I think you like Dominic Lovett, but Kendrick Law, I don't know. I go back. I feel like the odd man out would probably be Lovett, because there might be some redundancy there between him and Law. As much as I like Dom, I could see him sticking around on the practice squad. But if they can find room for him, maybe it's six. But I think you're feeling pretty good about this room. I don't know about you guys. When you're looking at Saint, J-Mo, Tesla, if Tesla continues to develop, and I don't know if it's all going to be there in year two, but just the trajectory it looks like he's on, like, you could be talking about this as the best wide receiver room in the NFL. So I think he's got that sort of upside. Now, my question with Tesla is, where is the opportunity going to come from? Because there's so many mouths to feed in this offense, man, from these three receivers, you look at the tight end room, even Gibbs in the passing game at the running back position. Like, I don't know exactly where the touches are going to come from, like, if he's going to ever be like a 1,000-yard receiver in this specific offense. But in terms of a big play, go up and get it, kind of stretch the field with his long speed, his long strides, he can do all that. And I'm really excited to see what he can do in year two. And I think Dan Campbell feels the same way. He was kind of raving about him at the owners' meetings there in Arizona. But Dortch, yeah, he feels like that Khalif replacement. Again, the Law versus Lovett thing, like, man, if I'm Dom Lovett, I'm not feeling too comfortable with my spot there. Because I think when you watch what Law was doing at Kentucky, like, it's kind of what you envision for Dom. Like, if you're thinking about long-term Khalif, and I think all of us knew that Khalif wasn't going to be here maybe in the next couple of years at least. They obviously move on this offseason. I think you're just waiting for one of those guys to break out, and I think you're going to go with the guy that you drafted and traded up for this year in the fifth round in Kendrick Law over a guy like Dom Lovett that was a seventh-round pick last year and had to show some special teams capability just to make the roster. So he might be on the outside looking in at this wide receiver room, but I think it looks pretty good from top to bottom. They got pretty much everything they want out of that room, and a guy like Tom Kennedy you can keep around the practice squad, sort of the breaking case emergency guy. Jackson Meeks been playing some tight end a little bit too.
Hey,
so
yeah, come on.
Not a bad room. Not a bad room at all.
Yeah, no, they're in great shape there. I also just think the way that Brad has already begun talking about Law just suggests that, like, they think really, really highly of this guy. Like, he's already gushing about him in a way that he wasn't gushing about Dom Lovett when they drafted him last year. And, like, they obviously love Lovett, and they were super pumped to get him when they did. But Brad stumbled upon Law when he was just watching the Alabama-Georgia game a couple years ago, and he had him just, like, kind of lodged in his football brain. And then he heard his name at Kentucky last year and was like, oh, my God, that's the guy that I saw a couple years ago. And you can tell he just has this, like, obsession with him, kind of this healthy infatuation with what he could be in this offense. So I think they see a more viable long-term role here for Law than possibly Lovett. Watching Lovett have to make this team is going to be a little bit interesting come camp. Like, I'm excited to watch that last battle play out for the fifth or potentially sixth receiver spot. With Tess Law, I agree. You know, there were multiple points last season when, based on some attrition, we were like, okay, well, if not now, then never for Isaac Tess Law. Like, this has to be the week where we see him get six targets, eight targets, and it never really ever happened besides maybe the Pittsburgh game, even when there was a couple of voids around him. So to me, it's like, can he come out of his second season averaging like four targets a game? That would feel like meaningful growth for him in year two. Like, he had two or fewer targets in, I think, 12 or 13 games last year. So, like, if they can reduce that to five or six this year, and in most of the games he's seen four or five balls come his way, I think based on the ability that he has to win 50-50 balls and to make plays in the red zone, he can maximize four or five targets a game really as well as anyone who's maybe not named J-Mo.
I just want to close the book on Law. I'm really excited to see Scotty Montgomery get his hands on that talent, right? Like, the thing that kind of showed up on his tape was he was a guy that didn't put a ton of effort into the plays where it was clear he wasn't getting the ball. And I think that's a pretty common thing for, you know, immature college guys, not understanding, like, run every route like you're getting the ball, block like the ball's coming your way every single time. You know, this dude's built, you know, he's 200 pounds and he's pretty chiseled for a wide receiver, right? And so we know he can do gunner. We know that skill set that I was talking about in the wide receiver screens of kind of feeling the blocks and that really rapid acceleration will play in the current kickoff format on punt return potentially. I think Law is going to contribute right away on special teams. I think he's going to be kind of this situational weapon on offense, whether it's late this season or in his second season. I to me, like, there's no doubt that man's on the 53 unless, you know, I don't know, something falls apart in training camp.
Now, looking at that tight end room with the addition of Tyler Conklin, I know last year when Sam Laporta went down, they didn't have really anything from, you know, in terms of a receiving threat. Brock Wright shortly got hurt shortly after, but now having Tyler Conklin, who's a veteran, but someone who's produced in his career alongside a guy like Laporta, who, you know, is coming off that back injury. How do we feel about this tight end room? Just in case, you know, a scenario comes along where Laporta misses a game, how do you feel about this tight end room kind of moving into this season?
That's some Anthony Firkser slander right there. Yeah. Absolute Firkser slander.
And I'm standing on it. I'm standing on it today. Wouldn't say it to his face, but I'm standing on it.
I'll give it to you. I loved the Conklin addition. I mean, I think in terms of elevating the floor with tight end three, you know, it's a pretty big jump from Shane Zylstra. I think Conklin obviously had a pretty bad season in with the Chargers last season. But, you know, it's just a weird fit. The way he described it is they really like guys that do one thing particularly well, and he's kind of that well-rounded guy. I think he's a really good fit for the scheme. I think he's going to get back to where he kind of was with the Jets and even at the tail end of his Minnesota career. And it's a guy that averaged, I think, 48 receptions the 4 years before he got to Detroit. And so I don't think he's not just tight end three. I think he can push Brock Wright for tight end two reps on this roster.
Yeah, the addition gives them some options. Obviously, we know Drew Petzing's background with 13 personnel. By the way, the draft really reflected the 13 personnel wave that's about to hit the NFL. Like, yeah. Some of these tight ends that were drafted in the second round that, like, we thought might go in the fourth or fifth kind of tells me that the league is kind of following Sean McVay here. But if you look at it, Petzing was doing a lot of the 13 personnel stuff before McVay. Obviously, some of that has to do with the talent or lack thereof in that receiver room and just kind of prioritizing you know, having Trey McBride as the focal point of your passing offense. But, you know, I think Dan Campbell was obviously asked about, hey, you got Petsing here. He's got that 13 personnel background. Is that where you see this offense going? And Dan kind of poured some cold water on it. And he's like, well, it's kind of a product of their offense, and we got some pretty good receivers here, so we'll see how it works out. But I did do a little bit of research here, and I was looking at the receiving leaders from weeks 10 and on, because obviously Sam Laporta wasn't around. I think he got hurt in week 10, so I wanted to look at some of those numbers just without him. You want to guess where Amon-Ra St. Brown ranked in receiving yards from weeks 10 and on last year? Anybody?
Nope. I got no guesses.
he was fourth. You want to guess where Jameson Williams ranked?
Oh, he was like first or second.
He was sixth. So yeah. Saint was at 766. JMO was at 762. So kind of neck and neck there. Yep. You know who was third and fifth? Michael Wilson, Cardinals receiver, 809 yards. Trey McBride, Cardinals tight end, 763 yards.
There we go.
So I guess my point is Petsing is used to running offenses that will have, you know, two featured passing targets. So I'm not really like concerned about his ability to get the passing offense going here, dishing the ball out to his receivers. You know, I think he did a good job at the end of it. I know that offense was a little bit broken with, you know, Kyler was out and they were down to like their fifth string running back. So not a perfect system, but, you know, I think his offense can support, you know, two, maybe even three top targets in an offense. So whether that's Sam Laporta, whether it's Saint, whether it's JMO, Gibbs in the passing game, I think he'll do a good job of kind of mixing and matching and distributing the ball to his playmakers because he's going to have a lot of them.
Yeah, quickly on Laporta, we obviously focus mostly on his ability as a pass catcher, but part of the Lions' struggles to run the ball down the stretch were tied directly to Sam Laporta missing the final, what, eight games of the season. He left after that Commanders game, and really from that point on, the only explosive day the Lions had on the ground was that Jahmyr Gibbs Giants game when he had like 18 50-yard runs. But besides that, they really had a hard time, as they did for most of the season, if we're being honest, just establishing a level of like flow and consistency on the ground. And Laporta was a big piece of that. There was at one point last season, maybe like in October or so, when Campbell was asked if he could name like a player or two who had made the biggest jump from the previous season. And he wasn't limited to like young players or guys in year two or year three, just across the roster. And Laporta was the first name he meant to, and the first point he made was about Laporta as a run blocker. Like, he really thought that Laporta had come a long way from his sophomore season in the run game. And, you know, when they lost him down the stretch, it was clear that they were missing his physicality and his detail. Like, he's really not going to miss an assignment in the run game. And I think adding him back into the offense for that reason will help spark this team rushing the ball next season.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the offensive line is a big part of this team. And I know we talked about it on really our post-draft show. We talked about the offensive line and what kind of to expect. And for our Dog and Pony Show pick of the week, we're going to go at left guard and talk more about Ben Barge, as we should, and others. But how do you guys feel about this offensive line as it's shaping up, your confidence level, and then at the end, your pick for your left guard this season to start?
This was the focus of the offseason, right?
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't just the offense, it was the roster, right? You had Glasgow, Decker out, you got Cade Mays in, you got the Larry Borum, Blake Miller combination at offensive tackle. Blake Miller's obviously the long-term guy there. And then you added a bunch of depth at the guard spot. And Colton's been talking about all offseason, right? Competition, more competition through the roster. And I feel like Christian Mahogany is bearing the brunt of all of it, right? Yeah. Like, Here's you and here's six guys fighting for your job, right? It's Ben Barge, it's Juice Scruggs, it's Miles Frazier, who I keep forgetting about being on the roster, maybe just because the reps he had last year were so underwhelming, but he's in that mix too. And I don't know, if you ask me today, I think Mahogany is going to be better for it, and I think he's going to win the job. But, you know, if there's a guy that's going to be nipping on his heels, I think it's going to be Ben Barge. You know, I think there's an excitement within the building of landing him. He's obviously dealt with some durability issues, but I think he can push, of those guys, could push for that left guard job and make life tough for Mahogany.
Yeah, I've been tough on Mahogany this offseason. I know it's Virgie's guy. Like, I was a big Venga Ioane guy. So, like, yeah, if they want to draft him, and he's a plug-and-play center to me, I think he's going to be a Pro Bowler by year two. So I was high on him, and I feel like the Lions had a chance to probably trade up for him if they actually wanted him, but they kind of waited for the board to play out, and they got Blake Miller, which I don't hate at all. But I was a big Venga guy, and I was like, okay, in that scenario, Larry Borum would be your starting right tackle. I think you could have hidden him at right tackle and maybe, you know, put a tight end next to him. You know, Tate's going to be on the right side helping him a little bit. So maybe you can get the most out of him, and then you're like centering on or right guarding on is going to be like Pro Bowl maybe caliber level across the board. I would have loved that, but obviously the Lions didn't go that route, and like I understand why. They wanted to get a long-term tackle in here and might not be picking this high again for the next few years. So why not, you know, draft a, you know, 9'9 RAS guy, great character guy in Blake Miller while you have the chance. So I don't know. When I look at the offensive line now, I think there's upside for this to work out in a way that you know, they don't have to go out and address the left guard position. I know they got Ben Bartsch, and that could be a really sensible signing in the long term, but I'm sure there's still a lot of Christian Mahogany fans in the building. So we've talked about it a little bit. The net gain you have from moving Panay to the left side and adding a center like Cade Mays is maybe that helps elevate Christian Mahogany. And maybe Drew Petzing's scheme helps elevate Christian Mahogany in ways that we didn't see last year, even before he got hurt. So having Panay on his left side and Cade Mays to his right playing center, I would just expect growth from that alone. But Mahogany's still a young guy too. Like, this is going to be his third year. So maybe this is, you know, the year that we see that internal growth and he takes that step forward after having a year as a full-time starter when healthy, you know, under his belt. And maybe that helps elevate his game and get the most out of him. So whether it is Mahogany, whether it is Miles Frazier or Ben Bartsch, like, I think they got some options here. And that's not something you could really say last year. Like, you even look at the depth, like Giovanni Manu, like maybe he's a wild card and takes a step forward. But if not, Frazier can play some tackle for you. Juice Scruggs is a capable backup center. I don't think I would put him at guard, but if you're talking about a center, he's more of a pure center than a guard. And then you got Borum, a guy that has a bunch of starts under his belt, and Ben Bartsch maybe. So if those are your five reserves and you keep 10 offensive linemen like on the roster, that's a really good setup. And I don't hate that at all.
Yeah. I mean, I love the fact that Ben Bartsch just started games and a good number of them for the Niners at guard over the past couple seasons. Like, they thought well enough of him in, you know, a pretty advanced offensive scheme to make him their starting guard. Obviously injuries prevented him from playing a bunch, but he earned that role in what was looking like a really good offense. So that obviously is a good tribute or testament to what he can do in a good offense. I think across the board, if you accept a couple conditions, the Lions did about as well as they possibly could have this offseason in fortifying the offensive line. Like, if you accept that, A, they weren't ever really going to be in the Linderbaum sweepstakes because of their commitment to paying their own players, and you accept that, B, that they weren't going to get two of, like, the consensus top tackles in the draft in Maui Noah and Fano, then, like, between Cade Mays and Blake Miller at center and right tackle, you've done a job. Like, you have hit your most realistic offseason ceiling when it comes to the offensive line. And I also like the fact that, like, this unit really can only get better over the course of next season, assuming full health. Whereas last year, that unit was ripe for, like, deterioration over the course of the year. I mean, Glasgow was banged up and he was playing out of position at center. And Taylor Decker, obviously, for being the soldier that he is, was being held together by, like, duct tape and glue by the end of that year. And so at left tackle and center, two of the most important spots on the line, like, you were kind of asking for diminishing returns over the course of the season. Whereas this year, with Cade Mays, who's a young ascending player at center, and Blake Miller, who's a rookie at right tackle, those guys should continue to elevate over the course of the year. So the unit, by December and January, when Dan Campbell always talks about wanting to play your best ball, should be hitting its own stride. I will take, for the record, and for the Dog and Pony Show pick of the week, my guy Christian Mahogany as the starter at left guard, because of course I will. But I also think that there were games before his injury against what game was he hurt? Like week 8, week 9. Anyways, there were games before that where you could see the vision that they have for Mahogany playing out. And I think that he can get back to that, having had the offseason to train and get his body right. So I'll take Mahogany as your week 1 and week 18 starter at left guard for the Lions.
Well, there you have it. We'll be back next week. Lions Collective, like the stream, subscribe if you haven't already. We'll preview the defense next week and we'll dive into it. But until then, we will catch.